Welcome to part two of our conversation with Shiloh Vain about being at home with spirits. I was going to ask you, have you ever returned to the site of the house now that it's torn down yourself, beyond seeing a picture and just be there for a moment in time to see if you feel anything, to see if you sense anything? Have you physically gone there and done that? Or was that just that feeling that you got just from the picture and talking to your cousin?
It's just the feeling that I got from the picture. I haven't, you know, gone there physically. I mean, it's goodness. The plane tickets and rental cars and everything else to get home is quite expensive because it's a limited access area. So just double the price of going anywhere.
Sure.
That's what it costs to get home. So I haven't physically gone there, mm-hmm. you know, but the feeling that you get from the picture is just nothingness, loneliness, mm-hmm. sadness. That's it.
Sure.
It's, you know.
Let me ask you, how did you get into the world of paranormal investigations as an adult? Obviously, there's interest there. Obviously, you've had some experiences, you know, in your youth growing up. What was it? How did you begin to enter that world or that realm, and why?
Well, having grown up and having a lot of different experiences that can't be explained and can't be denied, you know, there's something there to it. In late elementary school is when you just get thirsty for knowledge, thirsty for information. So I used to read any and every book out there that I could get my hands on ghosts and legends and Bermuda Triangle and everything unique, different, unexplained. So for many years, you know, throughout elementary school, middle school, high school, reading books, and then, you know, TV shows started. Mm-hmm. So that provided more information and exposed you to more things. And for myself, it's kind of a journey that I've always been on because it's always been around. Mm-hmm. But as you enter adulthood, well, now you are making your own money. You can actually buy equipment and see if you can record some of the stuff for yourself. And I'll tell you, it's funny. My first quote unquote, you know, of investigation, it was myself and a couple of gal pals. And we had decided that we were going to take a weekend and go to Corinth, Mississippi. And there were places that we wanted to investigate. Now, we did not have anything lined up at all. We were just going to try to get in to certain places by talking to folks. So we went down to this little train station. And the area is rich in Native American history. There was an old hotel that used to be there that burnt to the ground in the Civil War. There's the train depot that's there. And this is, you know, approximately 35 minutes from Shiloh Battlefield. So this was a major hub in the Civil War. And whoever had control of these, you know, of these crossroads, that was a major determining factor in how the war was going to go. Because you had the lines going north and south and east and west. So we went and we paid our little money to go tour this, you know, small train depot, and it was really neat, all the artifacts they had in there. And then we decided to become bold, and we asked to speak with the director, if the director was around. And we talked with the director, and we told them about our love for history and, you know, also our love for things that are unexplainable, and that we would like to investigate the museum that night if it would be okay. And she had said, well, you know, my husband likes that stuff too, so as long as my husband and I can be here, okay, we can do it. Just meet us back here at, I think it was 9:30 or 10 o'clock. So, okay, very good. We'll see you then. Well, I did not own one single piece of equipment. We went down to Radio Shack and I bought myself an audio recorder. And, you know, had some flashlights, just very basic stuff. Mm-hmm. And we went down there and, you know, we did an investigation that night. And it was neat. It's like, wow, these things, these spirits are potentially interacting with us on our audio recorders and with the flashlights and the K2 meters that my gal pals had at the time. And it was just so unique and interesting to see some potential validation through equipment. That was amazing.
Yeah.
And what was funnier was before we went to go investigate that place, right after we had gone to Radio Shack and I got myself a digital recorder, I was testing out that recorder in our hotel room. And I just, you know, set it on record and just set it there while the three of us were talking. And we had started talking about places that, you know, we wanted to investigate and what was this investigation going to be like. And there's some really neat places around in the area. And after, you know, after we had talked about that, I decided to turn off the recorder and put my headphones on and listen to it. Well, after we had said there's some really cool places around here we'd like to investigate, I swear that there's a Class A EVP male voice that said, really cool places. I mean, I screamed. I was sitting on the bed listening to this. I'm like, ah! I'm like, you have to listen to this. And, you know, they all, once they heard it, they were just wide open mouth, like, what? Play it again. That was my very first EVP in the hotel room before investigating the Crossroads Museum in Corinth, Mississippi. And it's like, wow. Wow. Here's some potential proof. There's no men in here.
Yeah.
During that weekend, that little rinky-dink hotel that we stayed at, the closest room to us, I think, was five doors down. There was nobody around that could have said that. And it was clear, like, the guy was standing next to me or something. Okay, wow.
And isn't that interesting?
Amazing.
When you have a moment like that and you capture something like that? Because I think so often when we think of EVPs or we think of spirits communicating with us, that there's always these super intense and meaningful messages that we're going to pick up. And in so many cases, it's almost just like some guy friend that would have been standing next to you in the living, you know, mimicking what you're saying, because people do that to each other. And just like, really cool places. Yeah, really cool places. You know, and that's almost like what it was. It was just as if someone was standing there in the living going and acknowledging and mimicking, repeating what you're saying as affirmation of what you would be doing, just as if they were living. And I think so often we put
Absolutely. We put
more weight on every word that we get through an EVP of, what is the deeper meaning to this? And I think in more cases than not, there's no more deeper meaning to some of these things than there is to, you know, you or me in the same room together, just having a conversation and being humans and doing what humans do when they interact with one another. Not everything is a super deep meaning, but that's so interesting.
See, you have to take everything at face value.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're sitting here as, you know, a potential investigator or ghost hunter or whatever you want to call it, if you're sitting here trying to look for deeper meanings and this and that, honey, you're grasping at straws.
Yeah.
It is what it is. And you have to rule out every potential typical or normal reason for what what potential evidence that you have. And why would there always be a deeper meaning?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people live, laugh, love a certain way. Simple.
Yeah.
There's not all this hidden stuff. It is what it is.
Yeah, you're exactly right. What was your opinion of ghost hunting equipment prior to going into this? Because obviously, let me ask you this first. What year was this where you went in and had this experience?
Oh, goodness.
Or ballpark.
I want to say, I think somewhere around 2002-ish.
Okay.
2002 to 2004,
sure.
I believe.
Okay.
It was around that time.
So it's in the earlier days of ghost hunting equipment becoming a thing, beyond a tape recorder. But what was your opinion at the time of people capturing things, of capturing EVPs or using different pieces of technology of that moment in time to capture ghosts? Because obviously we're starting to see those things on television, and a lot of it on television obviously overplayed or over exaggerated for what it is. There obviously still is, you know, true use to these things, and you can get true results. Before you actually got something yourself, before you heard that voice come through that recorder that you knew was not in that room, what were your thoughts on being able to capture something with a piece of equipment?
Well, tough question. So that, you know, the early 2000s wasn't necessarily in the early stage of equipment. By that time in history, you've got to realize, you know, Paranormal State had already been out there. Ghost Hunters had already been out there.
True.
I think,
yeah.
I'm not sure. But, you know, so there was quite a lot of information or television shows, you know, that showed the use of equipment over time. So K2 meters, digital recorders, night vision cameras,
mm-hmm.
I want to say even thermal imaging cameras, all of that was being shown on TV.
Yeah.
So it's not that the equipment was in the infancy part. Yes, some of it was just coming out and being used for that purpose, such as thermal imaging.
It's kind of like
cameras.
Round one at the time.
So, you know, my impression of it is that I think, you know, at that point in time, I thought it was neat to be able to potentially use equipment to potentially capture some paranormal evidence. So I thought it was a neat idea. And once I financially had some means, getting my digital recorder and being able to actually capture something,
mm-hmm.
That was blooming fantastic.
Yeah.
That blew my mind. I'm like, wow. So this is a potential tool to be able to use to back up the personal experiences that I've been having for years. And I still have that recorder to this day, and it is still the best recorder I have. And it's one of those things where once you start using some equipment, well, then you want more and different equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, needless to say, tons of equipment over here to be able to use to potentially look mm-hmm. at the paranormal. You know, with all that being said, none of this equipment was necessarily designed or can measure, quote unquote, paranormal activity. It's measuring differences in, you know, it's taking audio and, okay, you're left with a voice from a person who wasn't there. That's potential activity. Can you prove it? No. But it's really neat.
Sure.
You know, same thing with the K2 meters, the REM pods, it's measuring energy. Can you prove that it is paranormal when you have a big jump or a big blip? No. But it's measuring a disturbance there. Yeah, cool.
And that's what's interesting about it. Do you feel that we've gotten any further in terms of changing an opinion of the skeptical realm of our world with all of this equipment and all of these pieces of evidence that now exist that wouldn't have existed 20, 25 years ago beyond an EVP or there was a couple other things obviously too, but now we have things, you know, down to the point of having somewhat intelligible conversations at times with spirits. We have the devices which can show you almost outlines of where things may be. And there's just so many interesting pieces and facets to the world of paranormal investigating that did not exist so many years ago that one can take out of an investigation and say, look at all of this. Look at all of these things that I found that really point into the direction of what, not only just that this place is haunted, but in the direction of who we think may be haunting it, connecting it to history, connecting it to something tangible. Have we gotten any closer, though, with all of these pieces of evidence to convincing anyone who already doesn't believe in this stuff that this is real?
Well, Well,
or are we just all
that's a loaded question.
Or are we all just reconfirming to ourselves over and over that we know this is real. We already believe it's real,
But I mean, it's one of those loaded questions. Yeah. I'll try to tackle that from different angles because I think there's many, facets to it.
Yeah.
So are we closer to changing a skeptic's mind? Number one, who are we to change their mind? Why? Why do I necessarily have to change somebody's mind?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a personal journey for everybody. I also think there is no way to prove or disprove what you've potentially captured. You know, you have all of this quote unquote evidence, and I'm going to say potential evidence that will point towards possible spirits or different things or saying, hey, the place is potentially haunted. But I also think that you're always going to have to use that word potential or potentially haunted because you can't prove it. You can't disprove it. All you're doing is building up this pile of potential evidence that it's pointing towards. I don't think that we're necessarily ever going to find the definitive nail in the coffin. Here it is. It is 100% undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I'm saying that, as technology has improved over time, the thing you have to realize, technology has improved over time. So look at these movies, look at CGI, look at audio, look at all these amazing things that people are creating for entertainment purposes. And there will always be that doubt that any potential evidence that a paranormal investigator may put out there has been created or doctored or faked. And there are some people in every profession, no matter what, that are fakers and scammers, and that's what they do. They get off on it.
Sure.
So you're always going to have that taint there. So I don't think there's ever going to be a point in time where we can definitively say for sure until we ourselves have passed on. And there's no way to prove or possibly change somebody's mind. And personally, I'm not in it to change anybody's mind. You know, this is something for me. This is my journey. And this is for me to get answers. I don't care about changing anybody's mind. Do I care about trying to keep things pure, trying to go from it on gathering good potential evidence? Absolutely. Absolutely. But I always keep in the back of my mind, I don't feel there's ever going to be a way just to say, hey, 100%, it's real. You know, skeptics can stop now.
That wraps up the second part of our conversation with Shiloh Bean about being at home with spirits. Thank you for supporting our program and keeping us on the air. We could not do the Grave Talks without you. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.